is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. This is the month of Brendan, our patron saint, and to celebrate this extraordinary man, special events in all the communities in Brendan country, and with one fellow traveller from each of the communities in Brendan country, a maximum 13 walkers, ideally a smaller group, will walk the 7-day Brendan pilgrimage, beginning in Ballyhaig on Saturday, May the 11th, on Banna and Ballyhaig beaches to Ardfert via Wetherswell and Terminirk to Fianna along the shore of Tralee Bay to Derrymore, again on beach to Castle Gregory and on to Clahan, and finally over Brandon to Brandon Creek. And after the walk on Saturday, May the 18th, from 2 to 4 in the Church Hall in Fianna, the Brendan Challenge Assembly, exploring what the saint's vision, courage and commitment say to our world. On today's programme, the Dawn Chorus, all the birds singing together from about 45 minutes before to about 45 minutes after sunrise, our most spectacular nature phenomenon at its very best during these weeks, as well the cascading explosion. Today we were recording the cherry blossom and azalea, by now wild garlic and bluebells, and so it continues. But every day is different now, every hour, every possible minute be out in the open and look and listen. Nature won't wait. I'm joined by field ornithologist Ed Carty, Superintendent Killarney National Park from 63 to 2001, Dan Kelleher, walks guide Richie Clancy, and conservation ranger with the National Park, Patrick O'Sullivan. Today's programme was recorded on April the 13th, when sunrise was at 6:43. Sunrise is getting earlier by about a minute a day. So today, our broadcast day, April the 27th, it's at 6:29. Let us have your Dawn Chorus story. Write Frank Lewis Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3200 or phone 066 712 3666. We're starting to record at almost a quarter to six, over an hour before sunrise. To begin, we're near the western gate to Killarney House Gardens, close by the Mission Road that runs from the Cathedral to the Killarney Plaza Hotel. And already there are birds singing. Robins, blackbirds and thrushes are first to sing. The pre-dawn singers are joined by wood pigeons, wrens and warblers, while great tits, blue tits, sparrows and finches only add their voices when lights get enough for them to see. But Ed, because of the street lights nearby, birds could be singing here at any time.
Street lights can wake up the birds or can keep them awake. The same effect can be had on large vehicles like trucks and buses.
The first bird we were hearing there was a blackbird, I think.
Blackbird, yeah. Jet black plumage, lovely yellow eye ring and a lovely bill. Probably in its best plumage right now. They're singing because of a territory, singing to attract a mate. Mm. Or maybe they have a territory, maybe they have a mate. But basically they're saying, here I am, look at me, or listen to me. Telling all other blackbirds, this is my patch, this is my garden, this is my territory. Yeah. Stay out of it.
What are you hearing there at the moment?
Mainly blackbird, yeah. Robins and wrens in the background, but mainly blackbird.
Richie, between here and the Deanach, ascent becoming ever more dominant. By April the 27th, it will be completely dominant. Wild garlic is a very special experience at this time of the year.
It looks great, definitely, this time of the year. And, of course, it's a health food.
You like to make pesto from it, is it?
You can make very good pesto.
We're beside the creation, or more correctly, the recreation of the gardens, including a specimen herbaceous border, and the special feature now, the cherry tree walk, in full bloom. It's absolutely magnificent at this time. All of that at Killarney House, that now houses the invaluable interpretive centre on Killarney National Park. The present Killarney House is the reconstructed stables from the original 18th century French-style chateau, where Queen Victoria spent a night in 1861. On the hill northwest of us here, Knockrear House, on the site of the very extensive 19th century red brick mansion. Patrick, the building of the mansion was the last straw in all but bankrupting the Kenmare family.
At one stage, it was rated as one of the top three houses in the British Isles, and it was a huge undertaking, and it took its toll on the general well-being financially of the estate at the time. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it burned down in 1913.
Here, a number of fine horse chestnuts. Dan, if you park under a horse chestnut at the moment, you'll regret it.
I don't think so.
Do you know that sticky stuff that falls from them and catches in your car?
That's part of nature, you know.
Do you have any word on that, Richie? You haven't been caught with the the sticky attachment from the horse chestnut.
No, I suppose we used them long ago as conkers, you know, and yeah. That was a great pastime in the old days.
Ed, as you were saying a minute ago, the clarion of a new day these weeks, the blackbird, as you said, small yellow beak, the matte black body, one of our two star singers.
They're lovely to see at this time of the year, you know, your back garden sitting up on your fence post, sitting up on the gable end of your house and just belting out that song. There's song thrushes, and I also heard a black cap over here on our right just coming into the song as well. But nature is amazing. This is one of the great spectacles, first thing in the morning and also in the evening as well, to a lesser extent. One by one, all the species will be waking up and proclaiming their territory.
Dan, in the dark here, did you ever get a bad fright?
I did in Muckross Abbey. I was walking along the road one night. As I was passing the abbey, I heard this music, the bagpipe playing. And I got a fright initially, and I said, I can't pass by without checking out what happened. I went into the graveyard, and there were the Scottish men inside playing the bagpipes.
What did you say to him?
I said, are you enjoying yourself here? I said, or did you come here to die?
Was your first thought that Gansey had risen again? And was,
oh, yeah, I did. And then another night, as well, I was passing, there was a light within the graveyard itself. I went in and I investigated, and I discovered it was a fire which the Boy Scouts had lit. Yeah. And there was some cooking, and the embers were still there, like, and so I was quite happy with it. If I hadn't done that, I'd say, as a card, the place was haunted. I'd say you're much safer in the graveyard than anywhere else.
Dead safe.
You might rest in peace there.
That too. In our lifetime, all these lands moved from Kenmare to the ownership and management of the state. Paddock, Ireland was lucky. Particularly people in Killarney and the rest of Kerry.
The Killarney National Park is made up of three great estates. We're very fortunate. Probably the first part of Killarney National Park was the Bourne Vincent Memorial Park, which was donated to the Irish people in 1932. Then Kenmare Estate, which was approximately 15,000 acres. Three of the earls died within 12 years, and there was very high debt duties attached to the estate at the time. So Mrs. Grosvenor, the last of the Kenmares, decided to sell the greater portion of her estate. The Irish government, they were in negotiation with her for some time, and they acquired all those properties.
We're extraordinarily lucky, aren't we? I mean,
the final part of it then was the McShane estate, which came over in the 1980s.
We're recording on April the 13th. We're broadcasting on April 27th. Dan, the cherry tree drive in the Killarney House Gardens is a very special feature of this time of the year. I was walking up there yesterday, Siobhan and I, and that was the 12th of April. It was huge blossom there altogether.
It is unreal. There's a lot of cherry trees around the National Park as well in bloom at the moment. The present cherry tree drive was recreated at the start of the restoration of the gardens in Killarney House. The original one was planted by McShane way back in the 50s, and that was replaced by the current cherry drive.
Originally, the Jarvis used to come through the Golden Gates, the gates in front of Killarney House.
Up to the time McShane acquired the Killarney estate, and they were totally outside the gate, and there was a big sign there, and he asked them to remove it, and they refused, and he said, fine, he closed the gates, and directed them down through Main Street and New Street, and they had to enter through the King's Bridge, and they couldn't get over the Dina Bridge, which is the first bridge down from the King's Bridge. He spiked that, and he dug the road at the next bridge, Black Bridge, and he obliged them to go into the estate through the White Bridge.
He really asserted himself.
He did, yeah. You could imagine, if we hadn't the Mission Road today, what it would be like.
The development of the Mission Road opened up the whole thing again, didn't it?
It did, yes, in the late 90s.
Richie, it's a wonderful time of the day, isn't it? You seem to have some
doubts. Thanks very much for calling me so early in the morning. Yeah.
We really miss something when we don't walk either before sunrise or after sunset. I mean, there was a favourite attraction in Killarney, I know, in the 19th century, of going out on the lake under a full moon after dinner in the evening.
So I'm well used to getting up all my life. I was getting up early as a parrot wished in the local post office here. So I'm well used to getting up very early in the morning. It's so much quieter and everything. As you say, you take more notes of things like the bird singing here behind us, which you would maybe at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning.
Ed, anything you're hearing now?
just literally above our heads. The rooks are starting to wake up now as well. You can hear them clattering up there. The song thrush seems to have taken over from the blackbird. He's certainly the loudest in the last 5 or 10 minutes, but that's just the way it is. The blackbirds here might have already started landing on the ground and looking, foraging for food.
There are more important things.
Yes. The song thrush is the one up here on our left, quite close, is just overhead, and he's the one that likes to repeat himself 3 or 4 times. If he likes what he says the first time, he might say it 2 or 3 times afterwards. So he's a great mimic, and he will mimic other birds as well. Starlings are great for it as well, but he mightn't say da-da-da all day long. He could go da-da-da or bang-bang-bang, whatever he wants to say, like, you know. But if he likes it once, he could say it 3 or 4 times.
That's like when Richie gets a good story. We're going to go on. We're not very long, only a couple of 100 yards. We'll go up to Gaelic Lodge. We'll talk to you from there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
On our Down Chorus walk in Knockrea in Killarney National Park, we walked through wild garlic woodland, crossing the River Deanock to Deanock Lodge, where now it's just about 7 minutes, 8 minutes past six. Looking east, the great bulk of St Mary's Cathedral, a black silhouette against the increasing light of the eastern sky. Your growing up years were only 100 yards from here, Richie. This was your playground.
I fell into the river one time here, just down below Sear.
Was somebody trying to get rid of you?
I think that was the idea, you know. My elder brother had kind of second thoughts and he pulled me out again anyway, so I'm here to tell the tale.
But there must have been lots of stories about growing up with the old mansion here and the red brick building, which was quite dangerous at that stage.
Yeah, I suppose, like, we're just even talking about Deanock Lodge here in front of us, built in 1834, just a couple of years before they started working the cathedral. And when I grown up, any visitors had to pay to come in the gate here. There was a charge, I think 1 shilling and 2 shillings.
I remember as a youngster constantly trying to dodge the gatekeeper so that I could get in. I thought it was a tenner, just sixpence to get in.
Yeah, that was...
You were a privileged set, like, you weren't charged at all, were you?
Anyone that was recognised as a local was left in. I don't think you were recognised as a local, thing.
So. Here in the parkland fringed by woods, it's hard to imagine we're only a couple of 100 yards from the busy middle of Killarney Town. Dan, great beech trees, among many other species.
There are many fine trees throughout the national park.
Yeah.
One of the finest oaks is supposed to be over in Tomies.
Yeah.
At O'Sullivan's Cascade, it's supposed to be quite large there as well. You have the famous oak woodlands in as well, and then you have the wet woodlands down below on the shores of the Lower Lake.
Indeed, great variety.
The Black Elder, oh yes.
Yeah.
And you have all the sycamores and ash.
Great variety. Largely silent flying at night here, particularly at dusk, morning and evening. Paddock, now modern technology allows us to hear the bats.
We have 9 resident bat species in Ireland. We have a lot of them here in Killarney National Park. Mm-hmm. In Deanock Lodge itself, we have a very important roost of the lesser horseshoe bat. It's actually a maternity roost, and their population is quite high on a county and a national basis. This bat emerges about maybe 15 to 20 minutes before sunset. It's just checking for the light levels, and then it continues to feed out into the night, taking breaks and coming back in again. It's known as the bat of the aristocracy because its favoured sites would be the old mansions, castles and all that, where the temperatures would be constant.
But as I was saying there, with the technology now, you can actually hear the bats.
Yeah, we've got, there's a piece of kit now that you can identify all the different bat species. Some of these calls at night when they're feeding, you would not pick them up with the human ear, and you tune into different frequencies and it'll identify the species, and then you'll be able to count as well.
Amazing what the technology can do.
It's amazing.
Ed, it's the same, isn't it, in the bird life, the fact that you can now put your phone up in the air and identify who's singing. And
there's an app out there now, I don't have it myself, but it's called Merlin. As you said, you can put it up in the air and it'll tell you exactly what you're listening to. The only problem is sometimes Merlin gets a bit confused, and I've heard of people putting up their phone out to whatever bird is singing, and it's come up with some species from South America or something like that. Sometimes they may not be able to distinguish between all the different birds if they're all singing together like this, especially the dawn chorus. Just over here on our shoulder here, there's a wren, our second smallest bird, small and brown, tiny little bird with a powerful voice, and he's just singing away in there. I also have heard wood pigeon cooing away here over our heads as well, and a great tit in the distance. So they're all waking up now.
Richie, your Killarney guided walks, a walk every morning here at 11.
Just where we are now, apart from my walks, people are interested in the fact that Ryan's daughter was filming nearby here. They love seeing Ryan's daughter. I can remember right here at the bridge in 1969, there was a big crowd waiting for Charles de Gaulle to arrive. He was coming here to stay, as we thought, in what was known as Kinmare House at the time, not Greer House now, with Mrs. Grosvenor. But the crowd here at the bridge, at King's Bridge, waited in vain, because Charles de Gaulle, I suppose security concerns, he came in through the Castlehouse Hotel, which was owned by Mrs. Grosvenor as well, came in the back door virtually, and he stayed in Derry Cottage, very close to Knockweir House now, Derry Cottage. He stayed there for almost 2 weeks in June of 1969.
Dan, James O'Connor's free weekly walks, all local people, so many local people now out walking. Dan, the pandemic got a lot more of us out walking and realising what we have.
It certainly did, the same as during the foot and mouth disease as well. Like, people appreciate what the park meant at that stage. But there was no visitors allowed into the park at that stage.
Yeah.
But it is very noticeable now.
It is indeed.
Particularly people walking, invariably, nearly everyone has accompanied them with a dog. They became very popular too during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And they're still walking very, very, very much in the park.
Yeah, the detached cottage here at Dinnock Lodge just beside us. It's one of a series of cottages very much in this style throughout the park.
There was a similar one down below at Roscastle. And then you had the one at Glenair as well. They were very popular in the olden days, but the big danger is that they could be burnt down. And this was burnt once or twice during my time as well.
And Derek Cunningham Cottage was another, wasn't it? The one that was known as Hyde's Cottage.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Patrick, conservation ranger from Killarney National Park, as I've said, for how many years now?
I'm in situ, Frank, for over 40 years.
My.
I joined in the early 80s. I've witnessed an awful lot of change, you know, over the years. Like Dan mentioned earlier here, the usage of the park and the facilities have gone up so much, but the appreciation of the park, and particularly by the local people, you know, they've taken complete ownership of the place, and they're very protective of the area and all that. And
was it not always like that?
Probably in the early years there, you know, it wasn't used as much. Maybe the facilities weren't as good. You know, you have great road surfaces now. You have great information boards and the entrances to all these places. You also have people get on these apps now, pick up the information. I suppose with the knowledge that's out there now, and people, of course, are very well read as well. I mean, you know, the way the park develops and all that, you know, in size and in facilities.
Ed, it's curious distinction. It molts completely, replacing all its plumage twice a year, able to produce two broods most year. The willow warbler is one of our outstanding birds, isn't it?
I'm sure we'll hear it later on. It's a migrant, summer migrant. They're in, not in big numbers at the moment, but they're in the last week or so, 10 days into Kerry. Very similar to the chiffchaff, but they come all the way from Africa to breed in Ireland and the UK, Northern Europe, every year. So it's a big, long journey. But yeah.
And they're a tiny, tiny,
tiny
bird.
Tiny little bird,
a quarter of an ounce in weight, a quarter to a half an ounce.
And they're, you know, to the untrained eye or to the man in the street, maybe I should put it, they're nothing too spectacular, kind of a greeny, olivey brown on their upper parts and kind of a whitish, off-white, buffy colour underneath. But they have a distinctive song, and as I said, hopefully we'll hear it later on. Very similar to the chiffchaff, which is another summer migrant, which I've been in since around Paddy's weekend. Lots of migrants moving through.
Dan, I mean, the cathedral still standing out in silhouette there beside us. The Kenmares were great benefactors of the cathedral and of the church generally.
Oh, they certainly were. And they had their own vault within the cathedral. And the Kenmares are buried there. And when she died in 1985, Mrs. Grosvenor, she was the last of the Kenmares. She's buried there as well. And that will give you an indication that the
contribution that they made. One of the features of the Killarney National Park is, isn't it, that the estates of the two great families, the Herberts and the Kenmares, in fact, formed the estate.
And you were talking there earlier on there when the as partly whether when Kenmare House burned down in 1913, the Kenmares were guests of the Vincents in Mucker's House that night, and I wonder if they were still in residence would ever have been burned.
Indeed. Ed, just before we move on, you were mentioning to me there just before we came on air that you had a call late last night about a special sighting of a rare species.
I was weighing up whether I'd give you a quick ring last night and say there's something more important than Frank Lewis, but I said no. Very rare purple heron found yesterday evening up near Ballyhaig at a site called the Kirrick Loch, which was famous way back in the 50s, 60s, 70s and even into the 80s. It was a brackish lagoon famous for wildfowl and waders. At one time it had the largest wintering population of gadwall in Ireland, I think over 220 birds and huge flocks of wildfowl including Hooper swans. It also attracted rare American waders from
America. Why are they not coming anymore?
Succession. It's now reed bed, huge reed bed, which has turned benefits for species like all over this winter. There's been anywhere between 2 to 4 short-eared owls hunting over it. In recent times, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been a marsh harrier from the continent. But as you mentioned last night, I got a phone call, a purple heron, all the way from Iberia, southern France, Portugal, Spain, and it's just an indication of where the winds are coming from, Frank. I had my first swallow in Housemarn yesterday near Blennerville, so it's just a success, just an indication of all these southern migrants and vagrants are coming from that direction, and hopefully more to come.
Richie, it's already getting bright. It's amazing the change at this time of the day.
It's a completely different scene now, you know. At least we can see where we're going.
Dan doesn't have to take you by the hand
anymore. No. And
we're going to go up the hill. We're going to go on to Knockrear House. We'll talk up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great, Annabelle.
Very good.
Yeah.
As of interest, if you look across the road here, you can see the camellia there.
And it really is, looking at the white camellia there just close by us, it does, again, emphasises how constantly nature is changing. I mean, there are fresh blossoms, there are withered blossoms, there That's are right. blossoms on the ground. You literally have to see it every day, almost every hour, every minute, maybe.
But normally, they would be funders down to the ground, but due to the deer, they're browsed.
Oh, is that that's the reason?
That's the reason.
Yeah. Very good. Okay, we'll go on.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
On our dawn chorus walk at Knockrear in Killarney National Park, we're now in the gardens of Knockrear House, in front of the house, with Dan Kelleher, Patrick O'Sullivan, Ed Carty and Richie Clancy. Now at 6:30, before sunrise at 6:44 on April the 13th, when we recorded today's programme, your dawn chorus story, text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-7123-666. Here and now it's quite bright, the huge panorama of mountain, lush woodland and lake. Nowhere else is a better example of what the poet Alfred Austin described as Killarney's mountain, lake and woodland harmoniously blent. For a long time, the gardens here were neglected, focus on Muckross. But in recent times, the huge investment in nearby Killarney House and Gardens. But Dan, a great improvement here in recent years.
As you can look around, you can see that it has been cleared in a big way.
Padraig, there are more plans are here.
Yeah, presently there's funding to do some of the garden research and trying to establish to the extents of the garden in its heyday.
They went way down into the woods.
That's correct. The earlier gardens were part of the mansion, you know, which was burned, as I say, in 1913. And they were put together, designed by a very well-known English architect, gardening planner, John Dando Sedding. And it's understood, I think, presently that it's one of his only works here in Ireland. So in that sense, they're probably unique. But the present plan at the moment is to build a fence around the gardens and protect them from the intensive deer grazing. There's also plans for the house. They're just reviewing the functions of the house. We used to have the educational centre here, Killarney National Park Educational Centre, which catered for 15,000 students each year. But it's felt now that the demand has far outweighed its size and function, so their MPWS are considering to relocate that facility elsewhere within the 26,000 acres.
Dan, you had a unique experience backing up what Alfred Austin said. Henry Kenny, the Minister for State in charge of the Office of Public Works at a particular time, you and he were up here looking out over the view.
We had celebrated the bicentenary of the birth of Daniel O'Connell in 1975, and he came up then the following day and I showed him around, and he opened the Jabby Road there from Tork down to the old Kinmare Road, and then I took him around the estate and I brought him in here. And I said, if you want to get a panorama, if you will, Killarney, I'll show it to you from the upstairs room and of the house here. And he was very bad at the time. He was within a week or two of death because he was suffering from cancer, and he knew it as well. And I remember well taking him up here, and he looked out the bedroom window of this house here above us. And he said, Dan, he says, if heaven is half as nice as this, I'm happy to go. And a week later, he was up in care. And he opened Care Castle, and he was so weak he stayed in bed in the hotel for about 5 or 10 minutes before the opening of the castle. And they brought the car for him to transport down to the castle to open it, and he got out of bed and he went down and he officially opened Care Castle, and he died a week later.
Gosh, this is a great place to hear the dawn chorus in the woodland and the gardens. Ed, there are very few other places that offer so much.
Fantastic view. It's like an amphitheatre, like a bowl shape. There's a chiff-chaff over here singing monotonous kind of a song, chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff. Up close and personal sounds more like silt salt, silt salt. And down behind us here, where you're looking down, Frank, there's a black cap singing down there as well. Both summer migrants, but amazingly both not regarded as wintering birds at all until maybe the 70s and 80s when they were found lurking in our suburban gardens. An amazing story I heard way back in the mid to late 80s in Tralee was there was one or two birds in Tralee, and a former ranger from here, Terry Carruthers, came over to ring the birds because it was fairly big news at the time in Kerry that we'd black caps wintering in a garden. So there was just one or two reported. Males and females are very similar. They're kind of a olivey browny grey kind of a colour, about the size of a robin, but the male has a black cap and the female has a reddish cap. So Terry came over with nets and put them up in front of bushes, and they're invisible to birds, and you have to be trained as a ringer to do all this. But in the space of a couple of hours, Terry just didn't catch one or two birds, he caught seven. And it was mind-blowing at the time that there was seven black caps. So we all been looking around over the years, and I have black caps in my garden now in the winter, so yeah. Common. It's just a mild climate.
Richie, you were talking earlier about the visit of Charles de Gaulle. You had an important function with the media during that visit.
I read there was 31 assassination attempts on de Gaulle over the years. At the same time, Ryan's daughter was being filmed here. I remember Saturday morning, I grabbed my father's bike, a black bike that was very popular at the time, came down past the Dinnock Lodge, and I was cycling down, and I was this man on side the road, a very tall man, wiry looking with a beard. He stopped me, and he says, "You're local, are you?" I think he says, and I said, "I am, yeah." Maybe, he said, you could tell me where I could go and get a shot of the house there, he said, Kinmare House, where de Gaulle is staying, because I can't get near the place with all the security. Yeah. There was French security up in the trees and everything like that. So I said, I could, but you'd be very far away. So he says, that's no problem. He opened a little bag he had. He took out a telescopic lens. He said, no problem. Distance is it. So I brought him down further to the White Bridge, and he took a few shots there. I remember he came through the Game Wood, and he said, "Geez, this place is like Vietnam," he said. He gave me a few bobs as well, in fairness.
Oh, good. That's the important thing. That's the important thing.
I left anyway, and I was wondering after, I said, maybe he could be an assassin. He wanted a, telescopic lens, wanted to knock out the Gaulle.
What you could have done, huh?
I found out afterwards he was none other than Paddy Kennelly.
Very great.
Who established Kelly's Eye after.
Dan, you were involved at the time when the state took over this area.
I know that the Knockreel Estate, as we know it now, that was purchased about maybe 12 months before it went public. And I was being here every Sunday morning walking my kids, and I'd come in over Kingsbridge, and I'd always invariably try to go to the right. And your man would come out to me, the gatekeeper, Mr. O'Connell at the time. He said, "You can't go up there," he said, "because herself, yes, you call Mrs. herself is in residence, so I'd have to turn to the left and travel up where we went this morning." When it became public, about 6 or 12 months later, and he called out to me, he was looking for a job, and he came into the office. And he recognised me, no, fuck it, he said, "Then I never realised that you were in charge."
I've heard it said that at the time when they were building the cathedral, which was built for something like £20,000, the huge red brick mansion that you remember here as a child cost something like £200,000. It shows something of the luxuriance and the huge investment that was put into this. And no wonder that it almost bankrupted the Kenmares.
I've heard it said by older people in town that it was possibly an insurance job, the fact that it was burnt down.
Ed, the singing continues, even though it's already reduced a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's reduced a bit. Maybe we're a little bit far away from it. I mean, like at our first stop, Frank, we were underneath the trees and everything was, you know, right above us, on top of us. But there are other birds singing here, blue tits and dunnock singing. There's a wood pigeon after breaking cover there, Yeah. Cattering out of the trees.
Richie, you have a story from the outstanding Killarney autobiography, A Hostage to Fortune, by Joe O'Connor.
Joe was a schools inspector. He lived in Fossa, where the Innisfallon Hotel is now.
The father of a very well-known artist, Sean O'Connor.
Sean O'Connor, yeah.
And but Joe had a connection with the house here.
He mentioned in the book that the Hostage to Fortune, he came up here and walked up the hill here in 1899, and the landlord's son, that was his mission, to give him a couple of grinds, you know. And but landlord's son played all kinds of tricks on him, locking him into rooms and so on like that. And but that son was killed in the First World War. I think regards and Joe himself, he got a job in St. Brendan's College. I thought it was kind of an amusing story. He said he went in there, and he was very young at the time, and he was not much older than the pupils. And of course, as probably usually happens with teachers, there was a couple of the tough boys in the class giving him grief. So he lost patience with one of the pupils in there, and he grabbed him by the lapels of the coat and threw him out the window, he said. Look, he said, the window was open at the time, and he fell harmlessly into the gravel below, and there was nothing hurt, only his pride, he said. Just after that, peace reigned in the classroom.
I can understand why. We're going to go from here. We're going to go down into the woodlands again to the famous Clough Macudder. We'll talk to you from there in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Experiencing the dawn chorus in the hours before and after sunrise in the Killarney National Park, walking from Knockrea Gardens, a unique grand sweep of parkland, lake and mountain. Now it's about 7 minutes after seven. We're at Clough Macudder, the Mass Rock. One big rock with like two bowls in it, both filled with water now. In the woods in front of Knockrea House, where people gathered for Mass during penal times. Padraig, here, as we came along, a gathering of red stags on our left-hand side, and there were sika on the right-hand side, all beginning to lose, and a lot have lost their antlers now.
Both the red and sika stags, they shed their antlers at this time of the year, normally from about March onwards, and it begins usually with the bigger animals or the more mature animals. And we can see there, as we walk through, there still are a number of the younger red stags with some of the lighter antlers, like two spikes or maybe 4 pints. And then we see a sika, 3 sika stags on the opposite side, with one particular one has 1 pint left, and the other ones are that little bit more advanced, showing the new growth already. You know, you see the little knobs forming on the top of the skull.
It's amazing. I mean, every year they lose the antlers and the whole lot grows again.
Yes, it is. And the people ask on occasions there why we find so few of them. The pregnant hinds, which be carrying the fetus, you know, the calf, they'd be lacking certain vitamins in their diet, and they chew the antler to pick up calcium, and that helps the formation and the development of the calf.
Ed, there's one bird dominating there.
Mistle thrush, right above us, up high. And unlike the song thrush, he's not repeating himself as in bang, bang, bang or da, da, da. And unlike the Lun Dove, the blackbird, he's not very, very fruity or very musical, but he'll be way up the top of the tree and again proclaiming territory, proclaiming a presence, attracting a mate. They like to go up, especially on very windy days, and he has earned the nickname in certain places like the Stormcock, because he likes to go way up high, and regardless of the wind, regardless of how ferocious it is, now obviously if it's hurricane it's a different story, but on windy days they might be the only bird singing, everything else is trying to take cover.
Dan, in the parkland here, Mrs. Grosvenor, the last of the family of the Earls of Kenmare,
she had a pedigree of purebred Hereford cattle. Yeah. And she was exhibiting at the RDS Spring Show and at the Cock Show as well. And the farmyard was just here on the right as we came along.
You were explaining to me there that in the road fringe here, from here out to Fossa, there was a border of about, what, 50 feet or 60 feet wide?
That's right, yes. In the 60s, as you know, the Planning Act didn't come in until the 64. And then board fault. They were very concerned about this area here of natural beauty. So what, in the 60s, they bought the land from Mr. Grosvenor, which was where the Killeen Court was built. And in addition to that, they bought a strip of land from the King's Bridge right back along, parallel to the Port Road and Valley Downey Road back to the end of the Golf Links, a strip about 50 yards wide, so that would prevent any housing development within the Kinmare estate. I think they were far reaching as well from the point of view of conservation.
Indeed.
When Mrs. Grosvenor sold the land, she didn't go public with it, she sold it to Port Falta.
Yeah.
And Port Falta also built the clubhouse as it is at the moment. As you know, Lord Castle Ross built the Mahony Pine Course in 39, and then the land they bought from Mr. Grover formed the Killeen Court. All that land was formerly part of the Kinmare estate.
This place, Clochmacudda, the Mass Rock, my memory of coming to Mass here on summer evenings, been eaten by midges. Richie?
I remember there going back about 30 years ago, we had an Irish language Mass here. Father Tom Looney celebrated right at the end of the Mass. A bird started singing, just like the mistle thrush above us now. And I remember Father Tom Looney said, I wonder is that the bird that Brother McCudder followed long ago. That was the story, that Brother McCudder lived outside in Innisfallen. He was walking around the island one day saying his prayers, and he heard this beautiful, magical bird song, just like the mistle thrush above us. And he put away his prayer book. He followed the bird all day long. At the end of the day, it was getting dark. He was up in this spot. He was very tired. He sat down there by the tree, fell asleep.
He knelt down. That would make a sense of the shape in the rock.
He fell asleep and he woke up, headed back to the monastery, and he thought, am I drunk or do the fairies take me during the night? He said, because everything looks different. He got over to the monastery, nobody knew him. And when the monks there got a book down off the shelf and looked at it and said, now I know who you are, he said. Your Brother McCudder, who disappeared without trace or permission 200 years ago.
Killarney National Park tells important stories of landscape, flora and fauna, but it also has a huge story of people going back to ancient times.
Oh yes, there's no doubt. There were small settlements, and they were going back to the time of the copper mines. There was a village built around them down in Ross Island, and there was a whole community supported by the mining industry at the time.
Yeah.
Going further into tourism, you can mention the Gap of Dunloe, where from very early times you had involvement of people meeting visitors, telling them the story, selling them the drink of poutine and goat's milk. I'm not too sure how that tasted, but I think people
did
quite well out of it.
You never sold that in Beaufort Bar, did you?
We didn't have a license at the time, so we'd be very law-abiding people.
The woodland is a special place. Anything and everything could pop up here. It's a good place as well for an ambush predator called a sparrowhawk. Again, they would be breeding in this area, and they would be chasing birds, like smaller birds like the coal tit, grey tit moving up, because there's a thing in birds of prey called sexual dimorphism, where the female is generally larger than the male. It means they can prey on different sized birds or different sized animals, whatever the species is. So for example, a male sparrow would chase things like grey tits, blue tits, whereas the female would be bigger and could possibly go after song thrush, mistle thrush, wood pigeon even.
Dan, in so much of the mountain and woodland area in Killarney National Park, old lazy beds, the old potato drills, very often on artificially built up areas to conserve soil, subsistence living, short lives. It was a rough time, you know?
Well, there certainly was, just in that valley in between Tork and Mangleton. There are great specimens there of lazy beds. It was very thickly populated at one stage, and they were depending, they probably kept the cow and grew potatoes and vegetables, and that was their staple diet, you know. A lot of them died out, of course, naturally during the famine, 1845.
And of course, this place here is a remnant of the penal times. I mean, people having to come to mass in secret places that they wouldn't be discovered. Richie, all of the visitors over, I mean, how many years are you now doing guided walks here?
About 30 years.
Did any visitor ever give you trouble?
No, they were always appreciated the beauty that is Killarney National Park. And
the quality of the storyteller.
Very positive feedback. And sure, you'd have to enjoy, especially places like Clochmacudder Wood here, this time of the year now, the bluebells are coming out and the wild garlic are coming into flower. So, and as you said there, we met some red deer earlier and sika deer. Great view from the hill there of Corrantool and all the mountains around. So very positive feedback for any tourist I brought. Yeah,
it's a wonderful heritage, Paddy, isn't it? But it is one that needs to be looked after.
We're fortunate, I suppose, in the times we live in presently, that the NPWS, and in particular Killarney National Park, is very well funded. There's a big drive over the last 5 years or so, taking on new staff from gardeners, junior operatives, rangers. That's going to continue into the future, because they realise that the park is expanding. You know, we're 26,000 acres presently. We're also on the acquisition trail, so hopefully if suitable properties come available, you know, I would say close to the boundaries of the park, they'll be considered wilder areas, which you'd have a limited appeal to other purchasers.
An American landed on Erin's Green Isle. He gazed at Killarney with rapturous smile. "How can I buy it?" he said to his guide. "I'll tell you how." With a smile he replied, "How can you buy all the stars in the skies? How can you buy two blue Irish eyes? How can you purchase a fond mother's sighs? How can you buy Killarney? Nature bestowed all her gifts with a smile. The emerald, the shamrock, the blarney. When you can buy all these wonderful things, then you can buy Killarney. Such a wonderful landscape you never have seen. A jewel so rare 'twould befit any queen. Pride of old Erin, a joy to behold. Heaven on earth, far more precious than gold. How can you buy all the stars in the skies? How can you buy two blue Irish eyes? How can you purchase a fond mother's sighs? How can you buy Killarney? Nature bestowed all her gifts with a smile. The emerald, the shamrock, and the blarney. when you can buy all these wonderful things, then you can buy Killarney. Then you can buy Killarney.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Today, walking in the surrounds of Knockrear House in the shadow of the cathedral, listening to nature's unparalleled musical experience from the hour before sunrise, which this morning was at 6:29. That's the morning of our broadcast, the 27th of April. Nowhere has singing like this, not in the greatest concert hall, the liveliest traditional session, and all of it's free, recorded on April the 13th. Your Dáil Chorus story for future programmes, write Frank Lewis, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. You can text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. I'm joined by field ornithologist Ed Carty, walks guide Richie Clancy, Killarney National Park superintendent from 63 to 2001 Dan Kelleher, conservation ranger Killarney National Park Patrick O'Sullivan. We're still in the woods immediately in front of Knockrear House here in late April and early May. A great carpet of bluebells. Some of the bluebells are just beginning to appear on our day of recording. Now at 7:30.
The birds are still singing, Frank. The new birds I've heard in the last 10 or 15 minutes have been goldcrest, our tiniest bird, a kind of a greeny olive colour, and chaffinch. Male and female is different. The female is brown with bits of white in its tail and wing bars. The male is much more beautiful with a pink, reddish chest, blue head, and green olive colours on its back. The reason why a lot of the females of a lot of species are brown or subdued colours is that when they're sitting on the nest, they won't attract attention. Think, for example, of a male mallard and a female mallard. So the mallard is just basically brown, and the male with his big violet green head and white plumage would stand on a mile. Now, they do take turns in incubating eggs and incubating young, but females for most species do a lot of that, like, you know.
It's amazing. It's changed in the human sphere. I mean, the women do all the decorating and the... Can you explain that?
No. I won't even touch that subject now, Frank.
Richie, down in the woods here, you didn't do any of your courting down here, did you?
The sensor comes in there, Frank, you know, so we can't be saying anything. It was always a lovely place to walk with the Madra, very close to home. And our parents got rid of us when we were youngsters, and we spent most of our time here, so we'd be out under their feet, as they'd say.
Dan, as we were saying when we were up in the gardens, the gardens here were very much more extensive. The red brick remains surrounding steps marking a feature. I mean, they came right down into this area, didn't they?
Oh, God, that's just a beautiful area, like, you know, the slope down into the towards the lake, like.
Yeah.
This woodland where we are at the moment is a beautiful woodland, a deciduous woodland.
Yeah.
Made up of ash, oak and beech, and it's very nice. And the bluebells, as you say, as well. Yeah.
Wasn't that a wonderful phenomenon we passed just a minute ago, that fallen tree?
Right,
the whole length of it.
Yeah, but it was about 30 feet long. Yeah,
yeah, the whole length of it was marked right. By the deer. Well,
that's right, without any side branches or anything.
Yeah.
A smooth bark, you know. Right.
Extraordinary, extraordinary. Nice. As Dan was saying, the gardens, and you were saying earlier, the gardens came way down here at one stage, and yet now, carpets of bluebells, the wild garlic that we were seeing earlier, that has an attraction all of its own as well.
Yes, it has. You see, nature probably has taken over this part of the gardens, you know, and as a rule we try to keep people and, you know, the main volumes of visitors to the main sort of passageways and well-maintained walking routes. Mm-hmm. Because going into these more isolated, secluded areas, if there's large numbers, we'd say, passing through these sites, you know, you're going to have serious disturbance to nature as well, you know, and we're trying to avoid that at all costs.
Ed, last week and again this week in my daily walk to the foot of Mangerton Mountain, scattered feathers looked as if a hawk had struck a pigeon. It's survival of the fittest.
Yes, survival of the fittest, and hawks like any birds, or raptors like any birds, Dave Young to look after as well. So the robin coming to your bird feeder if you have one, or looking for aphids on leaves, is looking after its young birds this time of year. And similarly, sparrowhawks have to live and feed as well, and the aphids on leaves or peanut feeders won't work for them, so they're out catching whatever they can, and usually that's birds. As I said earlier, it's a great place in here for an ambush predator like sparrowhawk. In the UK, they would have a bigger version. They also would have sparrowhawk, but they would have a goshawk, quite rare in Ireland, and very secretive during the breeding season. Survival of the fittest, Frank.
Richie, in August 1861, Queen Victoria wasn't impressed by the French-style chateau Killarney House, and as a result, the Kenmares built the great red brick mansion and gardens that was here in Knockrear.
They say her host lived on the hill just above us here in Prospect House, which is most people would be familiar with the well as they walk in Knockrear Hill. Prospect House was there on the brow of the hill, and it was come the end of its time when Queen Victoria visited in 1861. And of course, when she walked over to where Knockrear House is now, like us all, she was very impressed by the view. She said to her host, "This is where you should build your new mansion." And he did what he was told. And around 1870 or so, they built Killarney House, which is a bit confusing because the name kept changing around. Killarney House was burnt down, as we said earlier, 1913. It was replaced in 1958 by Kenmare House. And when Mrs. Grosvenor vacated that then around 1972, I think, she built a similar house next to the Castlehouse Hotel, and she brought the name with her. So that was Kenmare House. And she lived her final years there in 1985 in Kenmare House. But it's a bit confusing for historians in the future, particularly, I think, because the names changed location so many times.
But isn't Killarney famous for that sort of thing? I know it was said of the boatmen way back that if you were particularly generous, that they would name a headland after you. But next week, if there was a more generous successor, the name of the headland changed to suit the following guest.
Well, the story I heard was islands, various islands. You have about 30 islands on Loch Lane here. So I heard that they named the islands, which they named after the generous tipper, we'll call him.
Dan, I know one of your favourite things to do is to walk in the park in the dark. And as I was saying earlier, that used to be hugely popular, particularly in Victorian times, and after that, people came out on special occasions. And it's something that people miss now and are caught up in, well, they're no longer smoky places, but crowded places and so on.
They become accustomed to the bright lights, and they don't walk out at all in the open. But it's beautiful to walk at night. You can see the stars, and you can see the trees silhouettes against the sky, and you can see the moon as well. I've often seen the moon sitting right on top of maybe Mangleton Mountain or Top Mountain.
It's an amazing experience.
It is unreal, yeah. And at one time, people were afraid to walk around Muckers, particularly passing the Abbey. They thought the place was haunted. That prevented from walking as well. But I think they've become more enlightened now.
Yeah. But even here, I mean, the other morning when we were down here, there were people walking before us. We were here at 5:30. And again, this morning, there were people out. So people are getting more used to walking in.
Sure, no better place to walk where you can commune with nature. You see nature all around you, and hear nature as well.
Padraig, lots of evidence of badgers here.
Yes, that's right. We have a badger set here quite close to the pathway. The badger set itself is a very complex structure with numerous chambers, and they have a very well-structured family life as well. They're very active. They're
you
very active
up to,
at night.
Up to 15 animals in
you
a,
could,
in
a you could, you may, and they're active after dark. They travel quite substantially from their set foraging.
And they're obsessively clean.
They're very clean. Sort of they say sometimes they're that the fox, if he gets a chance, that he may use the set, or if he thought they were moving one particular direction, you know, he'd take over a portion of it, and the fox wouldn't be as near as clean as the badger. The badger takes out its bedding on a frequent basis because of parasites, in particular when they're rearing their young, you know, they're very vigilant.
I was surprised to learn that their favourite food are earthworms.
Yes, earthworms, yeah, they have a varied diet, you know, but earthworms, slugs, insects, they would eat. It depends on what's available throughout each season. They have a varied and wide diet.
Yeah, fruit in the autumn and some mammals, particularly young rabbits, which they dig out from their burrows.
You'd be surprised the animals that can change from a fruit diet to a meat diet on occasions, you know, when foods wouldn't be available. It's all about surviving. These wonderful animals are very well equipped to carry out that. Yeah.
What's that sound behind us there, Ed?
Is it sika deer whistling?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
They're kind of trying to out-song or out-musical out the birds, and they're doing a pretty good job. But I think that's what it is, sika deer whistling behind us, yeah.
Yeah. We've got to go on. We're going to go down onto the bank of the Deanock, and we'll talk to you from there in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Listening to the wonder of nature that is the Dawn Chorus in the Killarney National Park in Knockrea, the edge of Killarney Town near the cathedral. Now, I think it's Whitebridge. We're on the Whitebridge over the River Deanock. You can hear the sound of the river in the background. Richie, an indication of how the Earls of Kenmare altered and prettified the grounds surrounding their magnificent new red brick mansion. Here they straightened and deepened the Deanock River.
I think they started back near Ballydowney Bridge, and at that time the Deanock, in the early 19th century, it flowed in the far side of what is now the football pitches there in Knockrea. And but then they had the flour mill there at Ballydowney Bridge, and they straightened, so it's, you can quite see it's a straight run in along by the road.
Yeah.
And the old road going west went over Knockrea Hill, where we were earlier,
uh-huh,
and exited out beyond the present Castle Ross Hotel, and they call that apparently Molly Boak's Cross. I know that the nearby building there, where you have the shop near Lieber's, Foley's shop, I think they discovered a big hoard of horseshoes in recent years. There was probably a blacksmith there.
Dan, this Kenmare estate, Ross Castle, Killarney House, part of Killarney National Park, was hugely altered. The very extensive copper mines on Ross Island, the planting, the changing the course of the river, all sorts of things over the years.
Yeah, of course, when they gave up the copper, things changed into it. And then with the building of the houses and everything, the whole landscape and everything changed as a result.
The copper mining, I mean, that was a huge change, wasn't it? And I mean, the amount of landscaping they did there after that was enormous.
Oh, it was enormous, because if we go there now, we could hardly see the after effects of it, even though there's a nature trail there. But it must have been a very big enterprise at one time. There was a lot of people walking there, and they were living there as well.
Yeah.
It's completely changed now.
And in recent years, with the developments along Ross Road and in Ballydowney, the finding of great numbers of small smelters. So obviously there was a lot of activity there.
Oh, there was, yeah, and you got a full of feed and everything. There was a lot of activity around that area.
When we started off this morning, you might remember we were saying there was a sound in the background. Of course, it was the humming of the sewage plant. But partly, I mean, the sewage plant and the new Mission Road, the cycling and walking paths from Deanock Lodge to Fossa, all examples of change in our times, recent times.
With the increase in visitor usage, they had to extend and improve all these walkways, and we're far better off walking in a good sound structure rather than going off the route and finding a surface that wouldn't be so good, or maybe creating a new one.
But with the demand, with the amount of trade in the park, and earlier, as we said, the rhododendron, you almost need dedicated teams who do nothing but clearing and maintaining paths, others who do nothing but clearing rhododendron, others perhaps who spend their whole time looking after the deer.
All the chores are broken down. We have a dedicated team that look after the path and roadway maintenance. That would include the trees and hedgerows. And then we have an increase in our gardening staff, but also then you'd have the increase in ranger personnel in the last number of years. It's gone up 4. The rangers will be dedicated to all the conservation work, and in particular deer management, because there's a lot of work involved in maintaining 2 deer populations and keeping them in check.
Ed, now it's almost 8:15.
A charm of goldfinches singing around us, red faces and golden plumage, white spots in the tail. On the way down, coming through the woodland, I heard a stock dove singing. Always reminds me, and I hate to bring it up, but always reminds me of a wood pigeon with COVID. Not quite the full-blown wood pigeon call, and slightly muffled and a bit hoarse, but they're a real woodland dove.
There are several varieties. The pigeon, the collar dove, and now...
Stock dove, wood pigeon. Collar dove only came to us from Asia in the 40s and 50s, and they've spread all over the place. You get them in the streets, not necessarily in woodland, but you get them in the streets and open areas as well.
Richie, great beech and lime trees here. I mean, the trees are a wonderful feature of the whole area.
Lime in particular are very often used as kind of avenue trees. As even you'll see if you walk from Killarney House to the Castle Ross Hotel over in Knockrear, you'll be following a very definite, say, roadway lined with a good share of the lime.
And the
linden
avenue up
trees.
To Prospect House, again, a lot of those lime trees are still there.
Yeah, there's a double avenue of them in front of what was Prospect House. They produce so many flowers in early July that very valuable for the bee populations.
Indeed. Dan, did a lamprey ever try to suck your blood?
Not while I was awake, but whether I was asleep or not, another thing.
But it can be a very unpleasant experience though, if one of them actually gets stuck on you.
Oh, it can be, like, you know, and there's no doubt about that. The same as the scripdons as well, they can be very painful, the ones that transmit the Lyme disease.
But are there lamprey found in the Deanock?
Better known sites would be the Old Weir Bridge.
Fairly deep in the lake.
There, yeah, there would be. But they come to spawn into the rivers. We have the brook lamprey and we have the sea lamprey. Where you see them spawning would be at the Garamine Tollgate Bridge as you go up there by Brandon's Cottage.
The head is unusual, isn't it? It's like a suction pad.
Yes, it is. They're primitive, you know. They've never evolved, I suppose, you know. We'd say like some of the other fish species, you know. So they look very primitive and not pretty. They're a very important species conservation-wise.
Some of the long-distance swimmers, the people who swim across the Middle Lake and so on, talk about having one stuck to them.
Yeah, that's right. And people that'll be diving as well, they come across, they try to stick onto their swimsuit, you know, their dive suit.
All of this only hundreds of yards from the centre of Killarney town. Probably quite, while this part of the park attracts more and more walkers in recent years, you find people walking here at any hour of the day or night, as we said earlier, but still nothing like the numbers you find in Muckross.
The numbers using the park in general has gone way up, and I think during the COVID period that really brought the whole thing into focus, the importance of places like the park.
Yeah.
Now we do have a better handle on numbers because modern technology. There's a couple of million people passing through Killarney National Park each year.
A couple of million people,
yeah. So I mean that's gone way up from the last 5 years or so, you know.
The woodpecker is a recent colonist in Ireland. Ed, it has that drumming sound, up to 8 rapid drums in a second. Are they being heard here yet?
Yes. Quite exciting news I got during the week, and I did pass it around to a few people. There was recent holes not too far away from where we are down in the Gamewood, which I believe we'll be heading for.
Yeah.
Recent excavation holes, which have been attributed to a great spot of woodpeckers in the last week or 2 weeks, and 2 other smaller holes, which may also be used as well as nestles. They haven't, as far as I'm aware, Padraig can correct me, but as far as I'm aware, as of right now, this minute, it's news breaking, they haven't been confirmed yet as breeding in Kerry. But every year we're expecting them, and the Gamewood seems to be the place, or Ross Island in general, but the Gamewood in particular seems to be the place for the last 2 or 3 years where they have been. I've been here a few times over the years and I've heard them. Very hard to see. This is the time of year when they are calling, when they are drumming, again, setting up a territory, attracting a mate and all that. The only way we're going to prove it is if we see birds either in or out of a nest hole, or we see birds feeding young birds probably next month or into early June. Yeah, it's an exciting time. They are widespread on the east coast, moving into Carlow, Waterford, and breeding over there. They came sometime late in the 1990s, early 2000s, we believe, from Scandinavia. It was just a southward expansion of the species again. You know, they're quite plentiful in the UK, quite plentiful anywhere else, but we lost them as a breeding bird way, way back, thousands of years ago. The late, great Frank King from Blenerville mentioned to me, I don't know when, but maybe 15 or 20 years ago, he mentioned about reintroduced them, and he said Killarney would be a great place, but they've come of their own accord, and it is exciting times, and hopefully we can confirm it this year.
Any update on that, Patrick?
Like Ed says there, Frank, we are aware that they're here. in the game wood. And there's no confirmation of them breeding as yet. We also have them in Muckross, Ross Island, and one of the newer areas that have been heard drumming in recent times is Garamine in Brandon's Cottage.
You were making the point to me as we were walking along that where we are on this bridge at the moment was an important dividing point.
Going back to the Kenmare estate, during a 12-year period, there was three earls passed away, and Mrs. Grosvenor being the last member of the family, she was under extreme financial strain and pressure, so she had to sell 2/3 of the estate, which was about 10,000 acres. And as we stand here in Whitebridge, all to the right hand side or the northern portion she kept, and all to the left in the southern one she sold to Stuart Robinson, a wealthy American businessman, who in turn sold it on to the syndicate which the late John McShane was part of.
Richie, you have a song that comes from that period.
An American, he landed on Erin's Green Isle. He gazed at Killarney with rapture in his smile. How can I buy this? He said to his guide. I'll tell you how, the guide replied. How can you buy all the stars in the sky? How can you buy true blue Irish eyes when you can purchase these wonderful things? Then you can buy Killarney.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
Walking in the time of day of the dawn chorus in Knockrear in Killarney National Park with Richie Clancy, Dan Kelleher, Patrick O'Sullivan and Ed Carthy. Programme recorded on April the 13th. Your dawn chorus story for future programmes. Text 083 300 3300 or 4066 712366. We're now at the bottom, our Gamewood Bridge on the Deanock, the last bridge before the estuary of the river. And the Gamewood is on the northern side here, just beside us. Dan, the negotiations for the purchase and takeover of the last part of the Kenmare estate was during your time.
Our first purchase was the Eagleness Mountain. That was nearly 72. And I remember John McCarthy asked me, he was chairman of the Board of Works at the time, he was the uncle of McCarthy in Plexico.
Yeah, O'Brien, yeah.
Brian McCarthy, yeah. And I said I'd introduce him, which I did, and he was going to bargain with John McShane in relation to prices. I said, don't do that at all. I said, it's only an insult to the man because he's one of the biggest builders in America. And what are you going to pay? I said, it would be only pittance. So he didn't, and agreed, and after agreeing to purchase, he included Roscastle and Inishfallon as a gift. And then later on that, in the 70s, around 78 or 79, they decided that they'd approach him again to purchase the rest of the estate. And I introduced him again. And at this stage, there was a three-way negotiation. They were to buy jointly the UDC, Port Fulton, and the OPW. So they met him and everything was going fine, until the UDC representative said, that is great, now when we get it, we'll be able to bypass road from Cathedral Place to Flesh Bridge in front of Mucker's House between Killarney and the lakes. And he said, no way. He said, I'm not going to sell it under those conditions. And he broke off the negotiations. And then John McCarthy was wondering, will we ever get it? And I said, can't you go back? And then say to him that if we purchase it, it will become part of the National Park. It will never be despoiled. So he went back with George Wagner on Board Fault, who was very good to the state as well. There started a negotiation and eventually it was purchased for quite a small sum of money, about 600,000 at the time.
Gosh.
Which included Killarney House, the middle and the lower lakes,
yeah,
and Ross Island and Rean.
Hugely important. Paddy, the river, which is almost silent underneath us here, what kind of fish would you expect to find there?
Trout would be the main species, and you'd get a lot of fly-in insect life, you know, that supports the river ecology. But you would probably, in flooding times now, I've never seen people fish here as such, but maybe if there was very high water levels, that you might be able to get a decent-sized trout, all right.
Ed, here the focus is on birds associated with water.
One of the great species of the Deanock River, I always associate with, is the dipper. It's a small round-shaped bird, brown, with a white throat, and just below the white throat and the brown belly, I suppose, there's a kind of a chestnut, a reddish line, a reddish coloration. They have one on the continent as well, which is called the continental dipper, and that's just got a black belly. It's also known as the black belly dipper, but it's the same bird. In America, they've got a different one altogether, and it's the American dipper, and it's just all black or all dark brown. They're a great bird, and they like fast-flowing streams, fast-flowing rivers, where there's rapids, where there's stones that they can perch on, and they've got a really electric call, zit, zit, zit. Very distinctive. You'll probably hear it before you'd even see the bird. Yeah. Very fast.
They run along the bed of the river.
Yeah, they have a membrane in their eye that they can close to protect their eye, and they can either splash down into the river, and they'd be familiar with how deep it is and all that from familiarity, or they could just walk off their perch and into the river and just walk along the bed of the river looking for dragonfly nymphs, crustaceans, spiders, anything that they can find like that.
What's singing there? There's something very...
Song Thrush again, and Teacher, Teacher, Teacher is the great hit.
Richie, on one of your walks... The Visitor from Hell.
I didn't have a person like that. What I'd like to say about here is it was a great place long ago for fishing, the river here. Not the locals were here. People often brought home their supper from the river.
Do you ever do any fishing here?
A little bit, not a whole lot. I had an older brother, he was very keen, and he often brought home the supper or the dinner, some fine trout. And I suppose that time way back, you had a hatchery near Ballydowney Bridge, so it was much more trout and salmon here then, because it was restocked every year, and you'd see salmon in the river at that time, and there was things like eel as well, very popular, a lot of eels.
Dan, a Cork man in Killarney, lucky man, weren't you? I mean, how did you come here, and what was the beginning like?
I was asked to come here by the late Dr. Tom Welsh. He was the director of Forest Alontish, and they set up a research program here to improve the quality of the wool. And I didn't even know the place, I never heard of it.
So you came here as an agriculturalist, really, was it?
A jack of all trades, including agricultures and everything, And I was told to call into head office in the OPW in 52, St. Stephen's Green. I'd find out what was to be done. And so I went in and met the late Commissioner Cullinan, as I was instructed to do by Dr. Tom Welsh, and he said he'll tell me what to do. So he gave me three instructions: go down to Killarney to look after the Bourne Vincent Memorial Park, and I never heard of it. And I said, where is that? He said, somewhere near Killarney. And he said to me, I said, what am I to do? Find out what's about doing. He said, to do and do it, and then keep us out of trouble.
A baptism of fire.
Oh, very much so, but it was very enlightening, you know. I enjoyed every minute of it, because I was able to go around for a couple of months incognito. It was very interesting. I found out all my faults and failings. As a result of that, I never going to survive, but I had to keep my head down and say nothing.
And you were accused of getting here on pull.
Oh, I did, yeah, because my predecessor was the late Dennis Geller. And they were saying, God, he ain't a lucky man. His son gave him the job before he died. He died in July.
Yeah.
No, you mentioned, no, he was his uncle.
No relation at all.
I never heard of him, Lord have mercy. He buried Mucker's Abbey.
Padraig, the road north of us here, through the Gamewood and by the Sandy Bottom, used to be dry for much more of the year. Is climate change what's happening here?
Yeah, probably the water levels and the temperatures are rising, and that would lead to, well, we remember going back, I suppose, a few decades, you could walk in your slippers.
Ed, the rare American green-winged teal was seen here recently.
Yeah, down near Roscastle on the Folly Stream. It's very similar to the European teal in all respects, size and coloration, except that the male is different. On the European teal, on the flanks, there is a horizontal white stripe. On the American version, that horizontal white stripe is replaced with a vertical white stripe. One of the things that Patrick has just pointed out to me here, because we're in a woodland, and it's a great woodland species, not a woodpecker, but a jay. It's a member of the crow family, but it doesn't look anything like a crow. It sounds like a crow. If you hear one, they can be kind of harsh and making all the kind of similar crow noises, but it's a lovely beigey pink plumage, a big white rump, dark tail. But on the close wing, or in flight if you get a good view, but on the close wing, it's got lovely blue feathers.
Richie, the Sandy Bottom was the place to swim.
Yeah, you'd run over here just a bit north of us, which we call the Sandy Bottom, and then a bit off here, more or less to the west, you've what they call, we used to call the Lady Sandy. They're very popular with myself and a lot of the neighbours from New Street in particular, particularly the below the bridge boys, as they call them, like Johnny Healy and Patsy Cahill, Lord Mercyham, and Sonny Johnson as well, who passed away not too long ago, Christy Gotson. Often we'd go in swimming, we'd be generally freezing when we'd come out, we'd have a fire lit usually, and to try and for a bit of comfort, but often the cure was often worse than the diseases, they'd say, because the smoke from the fire caused a lot more problems than the cold, because the wind kept blowing it in all directions, so we often had to retreat from the fire as well, you know.
We're going to go on to our last stop. We're going to go to Tea House Point, which is only a couple of hundred yards from here, and we'll be on the shore of the lake. We'll talk to you from there.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now at just after 9 o'clock, at the last stop in our down chorus walk at Knockrear in Killarney National Park, we were hoping to finish on Rean Point, looking out on Heron, Inishfallon and Brown Islands, but because of flooding, we're on Tea House Head, the headland at the estuary of the Deanock, looking towards Lamb Island, Loch Lane and Tomies, Chehy and Purple Mountains in the background. Padraig, the Killarney National Park is a great place to forage for a small bag of fungi or a handful of watercress.
Well, now, Frank, we of course discourage all this foraging now, you know, because it has a serious effect on the ecosystem of the woodlands, and in particular the shorelines here. I remember many years ago when you'd walk the woodlands in the winter time, there'd be an abundance of all these species, but they're fast disappearing. What people must understand is they're a very important part of the ecosystem, that it functions effectively and efficiently, and you may see there on the way in, we have some signage, leave no trace, take a photograph, but leave the...
Well, people are now picking in commercial quantities.
Yes, that's a problem, and that's something that we have to deal with on a daily basis during that particular season, you know, that we just have to, we'll say one time people might just take a handful, but like you say now, they're foraging on a commercial basis, and we have come across people with bags or big 5-litre drums full of fungi.
And some of them quite upset when you...
Yes, they don't understand some of them. They say, because some of the... In other countries, you see, all these are traditions. What we have here, the little bit of small amount of space that we've set aside for nature reserves and national parks, and all, we have to respect, I mean, what lives within these. We're the visitors, and we have to live by the laws of nature and good conservation practice.
Indeed. Ed, what's that?
We have a chaffinch singing over our heads. Birds are very adaptable. When we got here, it was quite windy, but even just looking around, you can see things like mallard flying around, hooded crow flying around, chaffinch over our heads. So birds will adapt to whatever weather systems. Waders and wildfowl will just brave the elements and stay out in it, but other smaller birds like finches and warblers, they'll just go into shelter in amongst trees, bramble bushes.
One I hadn't heard of before, the squacko heron?
Squacko heron. It was about 7 years ago, I got a phone call. There was a report of a wood duck in middle of June down near Roscastle. It's a North American duck. I saw a photograph subsequently, but almost certainly came from a wildfowl collection, so it wouldn't have been a true vagrant, although they have turned up apparently in the Azores in recent times, where they are treated as the real McCoy. But anyway, I came out looking for this bird down near Roscastle, and I didn't see it. Spend a bit of time looking around through the wildfowl. Again, this is the middle of June, so there wasn't a whole pile on offer. But on my way back through the trees, I saw this white bird just flying over what I thought was Roscastle, but subsequently turned out to be near, and it seemed to drop into a reed bed. So I was just walking back to the car park at Roscastle, and I said, oh, I better check out that little egret. But something struck me when I saw it. It seemed to have kind of a buffish coloration on its back, and I was supposing what it could have been, and I said, just a bad view, maybe the sun was shining on its back and like that. So I arrived down, and just before I got to the car, I says, look, I'll get on to Rean Point and have a look at the reeds in there. So I walked down, binoculars around my neck as I am this morning, and I looked into reeds and I couldn't believe what I saw. Basically, at the time I called it, look at that orange blob. And it was a squawk o' heron. Very, very rare visitor. Certainly in the middle of June would be a very rare visitor. They're normally associated with this time of year, spring overshoots, again coming up from Africa into Spain and Portugal. I've seen them abroad. I've seen one or two in Ireland previous to that one. But I got such a shock that I couldn't believe it. And I had a camera with me, so I took a few photographs and I was still in shock. It was only the fort for Kerry at the time, and it may be about the 25th or 30th for Ireland. So it just goes to show that Killarney is an awful lot to offer, even to an experienced bird watcher like myself. I certainly wasn't expecting that type of bird to come out of that, and people didn't believe me. I said, well, I have a photograph to prove it.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Fantastic. Richie, playing a game of golf on Rean Point.
We're standing here in Rean Beog, as they call it, commonly known as Tea House Point. And way back, we used to have a little, what we call a crazy golf course here, which were 8 bean cans stuck in the ground, and each hole was only maybe 20 to 30 yards long. We had great sport here when the aforementioned crowd from New Street come down here, and my neighbours from the Port Road as well. A whole load was, it'd be here. About 12 or 14 years ago, I was walking here and I found a golf ball, and I knew it was a golf ball from long ago because it was the smaller British size golf ball before the American ball was used.
Dan, the surrounds of Ross Castle, Ross Island, towards Library Point, the road south of Ross Road from the racecourse down, swamp woodland, alder, sally, some birch, short-lived trees, important habitats for ducks, water hens and swans.
Oh, that's right, sure. He is referred to it all there, age, like, you know, yeah. The famous place for it, as the whole of the National Park, really.
But the swamp woodland is a feature of the park that maybe a lot of us dismiss, but it's an important area.
Oh, God, it is. It's alluvial woodland. It's very important. It's important, like, as the Hope woodlands are,
yeah.
You know. It's an integral part of the ecosystem of the National Park.
And the other unique area, I suppose, is the one that you've mentioned a number of times as we're walking along today. The yews, the amazing yew trees.
Oh, sure. They're outstanding there. Of course, you have the big yew woodland in Oakhurst as well, one of the biggest in Western Europe.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of you were scattered around here. It's an indication of
Posic. On the way out here, there are a number of tracks that a walker might mistakenly take, but these are tracks made by mountain bikers who are quite happy to cycle off a steep fall. Posic, it's a further example of the pressure the National Park is subjected to.
Most functions within the park would be regulated. They're always taken on board on a first of all, you know, safety. And if you have a route or a particular function in the park, and if there's any risk to one's personal safety or general well-being, well, we discourage it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing about here, you see, is that we have a lot of sensitive habitat, and you're going through areas of woodland there that are very delicate. It doesn't actually fit in with good conservation practice.
Donal Hickey in the Examiner at 6 a.m. last Thursday, that was April the 11th, the programme was recorded on April the 13th, as I've told you already. Any day now, satellite-tracked cuckoos, Donal writes, which left here last summer for their wintering grounds in Africa, should be returning. About 7:30 on Thursday morning, I thought I heard a faint cuckoo singing north of Mangerton Mountain, but when then I hear phantom cuckoos frequently from the beginning of April and the way into July. Ed, what's the latest cuckoo news?
There are cuckoos already have arrived into Ireland. Down in West Cork, I heard reports of a few. I didn't hear of any yet in Kerry, but they're on their way, and satellite tracking is a great thing. It enables us to find out their migration routes, find out their wintering routes. A lot of species down through the years, we didn't know where they were going. Barnacle geese, originally people thought, came out of the sea as barnacles hundreds of years ago.
Dawn chorus has changed dramatically in different weather, but over your many years of dawn chorus, do you notice any significant change?
Birds are starting earlier because of all the lighting, heavy vehicles driving past nesting areas or roosting areas. We're expanding more from the town outwards into the countryside even more, so birds are waking up more, birds are active for longer parts of the day, putting stress on them as if they didn't have enough to do with finding food and feeding on birds, molting twice a year maybe. There's a huge difference. We've lost some birds along the way, Frank. In Kerry alone, we've lost things like yellowhammer, corn bunting, tree sparrow seems to be on the way out. We have gained other things like little egret, buzzard, and the aforementioned great spotted woodpeckers.
Richie, we're broadcasting on April the 27th. What are you particularly looking forward to in May?
Longer days. Hopefully the weather will be better. Enjoy the outdoors.
And the sun is shining now. And to give the last word, Dan, wild garlic, bluebells, rhododendron, hawthorn hedgerows, exotic blossoms in public gardens. What's your special pleasure in May? What do you particularly look forward to in the month of May?
I look forward to the gardens and visiting places like Garnish and Derrynane and Mount Congreve and places like that, where there's an abundance of plants and shrubs.
And May is really the most exciting month of the year.
It's the best month of the whole lot.
It's really special.
There's a right colour in it.
And so now it's 9:15 after walking, well, since 5:30, as you heard, with our own choir of many voices, the scent of wild garlic, cherry blossom, azaleas, rhododendron, our own private hearing and seeing, absolutely unique to us. And you, wherever you are, can have an absolutely exclusive dawn chorus and cyclorama of wild and cultivated flowers if you accept nature's invitation from an hour before sunrise to an hour after during these weeks. But remember what I said at the beginning. Every day is different now. Every hour, every possible minute, be out to look and listen. Nature won't wait. The birds sang, the flowers bloomed, all in this very special landscape of mountain, lake and woodland. But enhanced all of that with the story, 88-year-old Dan Kelleher, Richie Clancy, Paddy O'Sullivan and Ed Carty. Programme coordinator and location sound, Siobhan Lewis, and post-production, Colette Foley. Me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in May. In the meantime, with one fellow traveller from each of the communities in Brendon country, maximum 13 walkers, ideally a smaller group, we'll walk the 7-day Brendon pilgrimage, beginning in Ballyhaig on Saturday, May the 11th, on Banna and Ballyhaig beaches to Ardfert, via Wetherswell and Tarmanirk to Finnet, along the shore of Tralee Bay to Derrymore, again on beach to Castle Gregory and on to Clahan, and finally over Brandon to Brandon Creek. All the communities in Brendon country will mark the feast of St. Brendan on May the 16th and the surrounding days. And after the walk, on Saturday, May the 18th, from the 2nd to the 4th, in the Church Hall in Finnet, the Brendon Challenge Assembly, exploring what the saint's vision, courage and commitment say to our world. From me, Frank Lewis, thanks for your company. Francis Jones will be with you after the news. And now to sing us out.
The Killarney's lakes and fells, emerald isles and winding bays, mountain paths and woodland dells, memory ever fondly strays. Bounteous nature loves all lands, beauty wanders everywhere, footprints leaves on many strands, but our home is surely here. Killarney's lakes and fells, emerald isle and winding bays, mountain paths and woodland dells, memory ever fondly strays. Bounteous nature loves all lands, beauty wanders everywhere, footprints leave on many strands, but her home 'tis surely there. Angels fold their wings and rest in that Eden of the West. Beauty's home, Killarney, heaven's reflex, Killarney. No place else can charm the eye with such bright and varied tints. Every rock that you pass by, verdure broiders or besprints, virgin there the green grass grows,
on spring's natal day. Bright hued berries doff the snow, smiling winter's frown away. Angels often passing there doubt if Eden were more fair. Beauty's home, Killarney, heaven's reflex, Killarney.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.